This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to This Week in the NFL Playoff Edition. Conference Championship Week, baby. I'm your co-host, Fired Up Cowboy, joined, as always, by my partner in crime, the Yindy and My Yang, John D'Amato. How you doing, John?
Ah, beautiful. Getting down to it. We only got three games left to talk about. Two this week and one in a couple weeks.
And we have a special guest who, you know, seems to be turning into a regular here. The self-described little bit of paprika, a little bit of spice. The one, the only, Cowboy Senior. How you doing, Cowboy Senior?
Very good, very good. Fired up for the playoff weekend here, championship weekend. As I keep saying, living my best life. Doesn't get any better than this.
You said special guest. This is a three-man booth now.
It is a three-man booth now.
Permanent.
There you go.
You know. I am the Booger McFarland of the three-man booth, and then you guys just figure out who you are. But
think of more Cosell, Gifford, and Dandy Don.
There you go.
There you go. That's more like it. No Booger in this group.
Dennis Miller. So, heck of a weekend.
Going to be.
Heck of a weekend, guys, of football. So we did a big preview last week, and the games played out, you know, pretty crazily. This time of year, I mean, NFL more than any other sport, too. It's very, very difficult to predict what's going to happen. So sometimes you get stuff wrong, and the first game of the weekend, we all got wrong. So John and I both liked the Vikings. Senior liked the Niners in a really tight game. The Vikings had looked so good against the Saints, and this was never really a contest. The 49ers came out, out-physicaled them. Jimmy G was hot. The running game was incredible. And they just stomped him. I'd like to hear you guys' thoughts, but the one takeaway I had, right, so 27-10 49ers in a game that really wasn't that close, was the thing that really jumped out at me was I felt like Kyle Shanahan maybe kind of learned a little bit from that from blowing the 28-3 lead to the Pats in the Super Bowl, in that once he had a two-score lead in this game, I mean, he took the ball. I don't know if it's taking the ball out of Garoppolo's hands, but he was very intent on safety first, bleeding the clock. Just the run was working. He could see it was weakening them. He didn't, you know. In the Falcons-Patriots Super Bowl, they literally could have taken knees and probably won the game, right? He overly aggressive cost them the game. He went the other way here and with great, great success. And I think it's a testament to him as a coach that he was able to, you know, potentially learn from a huge mistake. And if they're going to play like this, they got to be the odds-on favorite. But we'll talk about that. But John. You were with me on the Vikings. Do you think this was the Niners were just, you know, just a better team? Do you think it was the Vikings and Cousins like laying an egg? Do you think it was a combination of the two? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, a combination of the two. I really like the reason why Shanahan was able to do that, but was I really like that first drive where they came out pass, and I don't think the Vikings were expecting that. The Vikings were expecting you know run heavy. And a mix, which the runs came later, but that really first drive set him back on the heels and really confused him for the rest of the game. That first drive was about a 6 out of 7 passes, and he utilized all his receivers but Kittle. He used a lot of Bourne and Samuel. He mixed it up and it drove right down there. And even though it wasn't close, there were a couple plays that you know, Jimmy G threw up a couple cookies. There was one turnover, and there was a couple others that could have been picked. It could have been a lot closer, but it went the other way, where Cousins was under duress too much, and then he's not the type that's gonna make his own plays and scramble. He's more of a pocket guy, so you have to have perfect protection, and everything has to be perfect. And And the one turnover, you know, it wasn't a good look. But I would have to, you know, it wasn't a wise idea to throw out Richard Sherman. But also, you got to give half of that's got to be on Thielen, who wasn't even really looking for the ball and
didn't finish his route. It looked like he didn't finish his route.
Go for the ball. And when it comes to that, then you got to be a defender and you got to stop that. So that was huge too. But otherwise, we got to eat it. We were expecting more from the Vikings.
I mean,
gotta give the Niners credit. They took it to them.
Ultimately, right? It's the Vikings' offense, and I mean, whether you say it's the Niners' D, the Vikings' O. I mean, the Vikings' offense literally just made one play the whole game. Right? They did the touchdown, the long touchdown to Diggs at the beginning. The only other points they got was when Jimmy G turned it over in his own territory. And they couldn't punch it in. And I mean, they just were a complete zero in the second half. Three and out. You point to the coaching a little bit, which I hate to say because now he's the head coach for the Browns. But I mean, it seemed like when the 49ers committed to stopping the run, and it seemed like the Vikings like just didn't have a plan B. Like if they couldn't get Cook going, that was kind of that. Right? I mean, what do you see out there, Senior?
Total physical domination. You know, the old adage, you win the game and win or lose the game in the trenches. Both sides of the ball, complete domination by San Francisco in the trenches, which was hard to see coming, especially what the San Francisco offensive line did when you look at what Minnesota had done the week before against what most people would think is a more potent offense than the 49ers, right? The Saints, they stopped them cold. And man, like John said, they passed it downfield the first series, and then they just ran it down their throats the rest of the game. They basically ran Coleman and Mostert just ran it at will. And on the other side of the ball, once they stopped the run, Minnesota just really kind of quit early on their running game. I mean, does anybody think that Minnesota has a chance to win a game with Cook just getting 9 carries? I mean, 9 carries for 18 yards.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of that, Senior, is just that they kept on going three and out. I mean, it was the Vikings defense didn't play that bad. I mean, they kept him in the game.
They got run on.
They kept him in the game, and eventually it was three and out, and they're just getting the ball pounded down their throats, and they got tired, I think, right?
Yeah, then Cousins, I mean, he made that one play, but he basically didn't even attempt to throw the ball downfield too much. He was just settling for these little dumps. And you look at his percentage, he completed 73% of his passes. Yeah, for nothing. You know, it's like that offense went nowhere. But really, really, the feeling you got watching the game was that the 49ers were punching them in the mouth on both sides of the ball. Yep. I'm watching it and I'm saying they're just physically dominating them. They looked really good. And they made Minnesota look like this not physical team, which was the total opposite of what they looked like the week before when they looked like the team that was delivering the blows and punching the Saints in the mouth. I guess you got to walk away and say very impressive performance by the 49ers on both sides of the ball. Extremely impressive.
Agreed.
They just kicked their butts, and I thought Minnesota was a good team, and it wasn't a game. They just physically beat them up.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a simplification, but that's really what happened.
Anyone who's alive right now is a good team. So they're a good team. It's just the 49ers were a better team. And so I think what we'll do is we'll talk about the other NFC game, and then we'll talk about the NFC title game. So Packers 28-23. Game kind of went true to form, right? The Seahawks go down against everybody. And, I mean, I think that one play cost of the game, kind of similar to the Edelman dropping the pass against the Titans. If Turner catches that pass, I mean, I felt like they were driving down for a touchdown to win the game. But Wilson, great performance. Packers hold serve at home. Packers kind of won the way they've won all year, which is they jump out ahead of people, and then, like, I don't know if they take their foot off the gas, but it was like it's another, like, not that impressive victory, but they're 14-3 now. So, you know, there's something to that. So, Rodgers made plays when he had to. They're a good team. So, John, we got the Packers going to San Francisco. First, what are a couple of takeaways from Packers Seahawks for you?
I thought the Packers should have won a lot more easier. And as you said, they let them off the hook, and then it turned out where it was desperation where it looked like they were going to blow it. If it wasn't for that two big plays, when they stopped them on that 2-point conversion, they kept it to a 5-point game instead of a field goal. That was huge right there. And on that third down and that sack, Preston Smith with that big sack forcing them to punt, because otherwise it looked like Russell was going to take them down. And it's just I don't understand. You just wonder why their offense seems to be in control, and they could score and move on them whenever they can. But when they were blowing that lead and those offense was going three and out, it was you just can't figure out why sometimes their offense goes for long periods where they struggle like that when you got Aaron Rodgers. And it took him, and it seems like he turned it on whenever he wanted. When he needed those two first downs, the last two to kill the clock, just picture perfect the way he scrambled and made two perfect throws. And of course, that last one was debatable whether he got the first down.
Yeah, it was close. I mean, they would have gone for it anyway. I mean, that was a nice play by Graham for a guy that's had, you know, one foot in the grave all season. Hey, that was a big play by him. The Seahawks, it was just a matter to me of just their defense. Just like all year, right? Their defense hasn't been that good. I mean, Wilson's incredible. I mean, he's, you know, one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the league, right? Like, depending on how you rank guys. But you can only do so much by yourself. He almost brought him back. They'll be back. Heck of a season. Senior, you have anything we didn't mention there?
Well, just a little different viewpoint. The fact that the Packers offense, when it was performing good, it was basically the guys. You know, sometimes there's bit players that come in, but in this game it was Aaron Rodgers. It was Davante Adams really at the other end of pretty much everything, and some decent running the ball by Aaron Jones. It was the, if you want to call it their version of the triplets, that's who performed when they were performing on offense. And for the Seahawks, I thought it was one of the more impressive quarterbacking performances you're going to see by Russell Wilson in a losing effort. He did an incredible job trying to bring him back. I mean, they literally, and they're a team that likes to, more than, I know their running backs were hurt, but they like to run the ball. And the only guy that was effective running the ball was Russell Wilson, right? I mean, he had basically more than half of their yards carrying. He had more yardage than all their running backs put together, and he only had 7 carries. And he was making some incredible throws and incredible, unbelievable Houdini acts, escaping times when you were sure he was sacked. I mean, so if you like to watch the prime time performers perform at their best, that's what you saw in this game. The big names really showed up. And basically the Packers, you know, Aaron had more help than Russell did. They're a better team, and they won, but not by much. You know, it was looking like Russell might pull out the miracle victory. It was a fun game to watch.
It's a good point there, Senior. And one of the things that struck me is that maybe they Seattle kind of waited too long to turn the keys over to Wilson in the game, that they, you know, they dug that big hole basically by not being able to run the ball and kind of stubbornly sticking with the run, where if they maybe spread it out and go playground style a little earlier, maybe but before you're down 21-3, maybe Wilson maybe they do win the game.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. Pete Carroll's Seahawks, who's really, even with a great quarterback, their personality is, before, when their running backs aren't down, they're probably running the ball as high a percentage of plays as any team in the NFL. They might even have the highest.
I believe it is the highest.
Yeah, Brian Schottenheimer offense is notorious for heavy run.
The ironic thing about it is, obviously, one of the most famous plays in their history he threw a pass to Malcolm Butler when they should have been running the ball. So it is kind of an ironic twist. See, where in this game, like, yeah, you might be right. Maybe they should have, if they would have just let Russell go out and win the game from the get-go, they might have won it.
See, this is what you get when you get senior on the podcast. We're talking about the divisional playoff game, Packers Seahawks, and we tie it right back to Patriots Super Bowl victory. Doesn't this remind you of when the Patriots won the Super Bowl? I love it, senior.
As you were saying it, I just kind of, the irony just kind of came to me, and the fact that there's such a team that really just loves to hand the ball off, and why the hell they didn't hand it off to Marshawn Lynch that time. Thank you very much. Okay, sorry. I digress. I'm sorry.
So you have, very good, very good. So let's talk about 49ers Packers in San Francisco. That's a big deal. On paper, I like the 49ers. I think you kind of have to like the 49ers on paper. I think the Packers are a real live dog in this one. One thing they don't do, and Rodgers, you'd say he's lost a step, or they're, you know, he's more of a game manager, yada yada. He really doesn't turn the ball over a lot. Right? Really, really, I mean, really doesn't turn the ball over a lot. And again, just like the Vikings game, just like, you know, I have this feeling that at one point or another in the playoffs, that Garoppolo's propensity for having one or two turnovers per game is going to come back and bite him. And Green Bay is the kind of team that can win a little ugly like that, right? I mean, they have weapons on offense where I don't think the 49ers will completely shut them down. It's a real time. I mean, I'm going to pick the 49ers because I think they're kind of peaking at the right time. I think they're just a better overall team. But man, it wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me if Rodgers pulls one out of his hat with a Za'Darius Smith strip sack fumble kind of deal in there to kill a big drive for the Niners. Great game. It's a really great game. I'm really, really interested to hear you guys' thoughts on it. Whoever wants to go first is fine by me.
Senior, go ahead first.
Well, if San Francisco goes in with the defensive game plan that they had against the Vikings, which I think was, you know, it's playoff football and you got to stop the run. That's the first thing you have to do is stop the run. And then you put the game in Kirk Cousins' hands, and then also they gave up on running the ball. Well, it's not quite that simple in this game, because if you do stop Aaron Jones and you commit a lot to doing it, well, it's not Kirk Cousins that's going to be trying to beat you. It's Aaron Rodgers. And certainly you have a chance if you're Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers trying to win the game. It's hard to pick against San Francisco in this game because they just looked so physically dominant in the last game. But those of us who say it's a quarterback-driven league, something we hear all the time, a quarterback-driven league, it's really hard to pick Jimmy Garoppolo to beat Aaron Rodgers, except to say that he's got a much better team with him. It may be nuts, but I'll be the guy picking the upset special, okay? I think Jim, as you said, Jimmy G, prone to the mistake, might make a couple, might probably will make a couple. I think Green Bay may have trouble stopping San Francisco's running game. But if they can just slow their running game down and force Jimmy G to make plays, he may turn it over a couple of times. And I think maybe Aaron looked really good in the last game. Against Minnesota, his passes were much more accurate than they've been the last few times I watched them play. I get a feeling the star quarterback steps up and wins the game. I'm going to pick the Packers because of the far superior quarterback.
How about the there's a little narrative here too. In that, I mean, I know it was a long time ago, but But you know that Rodgers has always had a big chip on his shoulder about the Niners taking Alex Smith over him.
There you go. Well, a little extra motivation for Aaron. Nothing wrong with that, right? So, yeah, it's definitely an upset pick, but I think Aaron and the Packers are going to the Super Bowl.
All right, John, you got to break the tie.
I'm going to have to go with the youth. I'm going to have to lean with Cowboy Jr. But also, I agree with you, Jr., that it's going to be a lot closer than expected. I'm really shocked at the spread. I guess it's because of the first game was so one-sided.
And I think the recency bias, the way they just kicked the shit out of Minnesota, is fresh on everyone's mind.
Yeah, so you know, a 7-point number. That would mean that even if it was in Green Bay, they would still the 49ers would still be favored by a couple points.
Right.
But irregardless of that, I think the Niners are just going to pull through because, man, out of all the teams, that bye week really rejuvenated them because the last few weeks they had some tough games with Seattle twice and the Rams and. And they really had a tough stretch to end the season. And they had to win by the skin of their ass. They had to win a division to get that bye. And their defense was really gassed towards the end of the season. And that bye week just kind of rejuvenated them. As we can see, as we'll see when we go to the AFC, sometimes the bye week not so good. The teams come back a little rusty, but that was perfect for them. And I think that's going to be the difference is going to be the line of scrimmage. They're going to dominate on the defense and the offense. As we can see, they're going to get enough of a running game, and they're going to get some pressure on Rodgers to just squeak through. It's going to be close by a field goal. I'll go with the Niners.
Hey, we're getting a little feedback. Senior, if you're on speakerphone, could you just mute it when you're not talking?
I just did that.
Okay.
I know what you got.
Okay, thank you. So
we're all good.
All good, all good. So where were you? Sorry about that, folks. No big deal. So there is a world, right? And I mean, I think the spread is justified because if you just look at it analytically, there's a world. I mean, that 49 where that the Packers offense hasn't been this high flying offense all year, right? So there's a world where the Niners D shuts them down. And the Packers' big Achilles heel, I know Seattle couldn't take advantage of it, has been a putrid run defense all year. And after what the way the Niners ran all over Minnesota, I mean, there's a world where they jump out 10-0 and the game's essentially over. You know what I mean? So I can see that. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but I think that is right in the realm of possibility.
A three-headed monster at running back, yeah.
Yeah, the Packers have to at least be able to slow their running game down. I'm sure they're going to commit a lot to the run, so we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
All right, so consensus here is a Niners victory with Senior as the dissenter. We're just hoping for a good game. I'm happy either way. I think either one of those teams is worthy of being in the Super Bowl and will make for a good story, so...
Oh yeah. No matter what, they're gonna get a first time. Whatever coach wins, it's gonna be his first. It's gonna be his first Lombardi. So that's always good to see that somebody gets into the club.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And so the big shock of the weekend. Let's look at the AFC. A couple of just wild games on Saturday. The mighty Ravens, who beat the piss out of everybody in the league for the last 3 months. And who we thought were going to beat the piss out of the Titans, not only lose, but really just get smacked. I mean, this game was the game was over in the first half, essentially. They were never in it after that. Getting stopped on fourth down. The Ravens looked flat, to your point, John. Like, the bye week didn't do them any good, like, hurt them. They were getting stopped on fourth down. I mean, at the end of the day, they have a ton of yards, but it's because they're in comeback mode the whole game and they can't finish drives. And Tennessee beat them up. And Derrick Henry is a beast with a capital B. We have I've never seen this, and I mean we've all been watching football for a long time. I have no comparison for what he's doing, because if you watch the game and watch the replay of the game, the Ravens have the box stacked. They're stacking the box, and it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He still runs for 200 yards, and I mean he's put this team on his back, and it's really, really incredible. And Tannehill has, doing just enough. That long play to Khalif Raymond was huge. Vrabel's coaching well. I mean, just an extraordinarily impressive performance by the Titans, who you got to take serious. I mean, more than take seriously now. They just stomped a mud hole in the team, in the consensus best team in the NFL. So I don't know what to say there. They were amazing. For the Ravens, it's bad. Yeah, I mean, it's just a blip on the radar, probably. I don't buy all the playoff Lamar stuff. I think they'll be back. I think they'll be fine. They picked the worst time to have their worst game, and they ran into a buzzsaw. Senior, what do you think?
Yeah, it was amazing. I agree. What Derrick Henry's doing in these playoffs is unbelievable. And watching them, I mean, yeah, the whole defense commits to stopping them, and they can't. Some of it's a compliment to the offensive line as well, but, I mean, he just gets a little bit of room, and he'll just run people over. The other thing is he's not your typical power back you'd think of as, 5 yards in a cloud of dust, With this guy, it's not only that he's getting those yards and getting the first downs, but you're just waiting because you know he's going to break one. In fact, he's going to break a few every game. You're just waiting to see him get out there and get going with that 4-5 speed at his size where, holy cow. I mean, once he gets going like that, a defensive back probably wants to turn and run the other way. Yeah, you said you've never seen anything like it. I think because of the way he's running now, it's kind of unprecedented. I don't think anybody's ever run quite like it. It's unique and it's historic what he's done in these two playoff games and rushed for over 180 yards, 3 consecutive games, all these things that have never been done. And it's just amazing. And Tennessee was not known. I would consider their defense a great defense. Their defense played a really good game. And it just shows you how statistics can be deceiving because we watch the game, and if you never looked at any numbers, you'd say, well, Lamar really didn't have a good game because he didn't. He didn't have a good game. It was as human as Lamar's looked. And then you look at the stats, and he rushed for 143 yards and threw for 365 yards. He was responsible for over 500 yards of offense and didn't have a good game. I mean, some of it is he threw a couple of picks. He got sacked 4 times. He didn't convert on the fourth downs, which we've watched Harbaugh go on fourth down all year long, and they make it pretty much every time. And I don't know, Tennessee had that on the big plays, on the important plays, defended that college triple option offense extremely well. So, and a game that Baltimore put up all these gaudy offensive yardage numbers, Tennessee's defense really shut down their offense. So impressive. Impressive by their defense. Impressive by Derrick Henry. I mean, to be where they are now, if you were to say, could any team in the NFL go into New England and win, then go into Baltimore and win? Man, it seemed like mission impossible. And we'll talk about it after. I'll let John comment on this game. But now you're asking them to perform a 3 in a row on the road, adding Kansas City to that list that would probably be the most impressive road to the Super Bowl in the history of the playoffs. So Derrick Henry, unbelievable. John.
It's one of those things. Me and Junior, we talk about it all during the season. I got to bring up the Patriots again. When the Patriots are 8-0 or when they go on one of those 10-game winning streaks, Roger always says, Bill would like them to lose a game before the playoffs start to kind of get it out the way. And that's, I think that's what happened with the Ravens. They clinched too early. And that last game, he rested all the starters. So combine that with the bye week. So this is about 3 weeks until, and they're real rusty. and you come out after not playing for like for 19 almost 3 weeks, and the first thing you got to do is tackle a beast like Derrick Henry. That's a rough ask. So they were real rusty, and to what you guys said during the season, on 4th and 1, 8 for 8, and Saturday it was a big 0 for 2 at 14-6. That was the turning point in the game. And that 14-6, that's Harbaugh style. He's not going to go for the field goal, even though you know he's not going to change what he does. Even though at that time, if you make a 14-9 and you're still right there within 5 points, Tannehill's not going to run away from you. But he stuck with what worked all year, and they didn't make it. And then it turns out on the other way, Derrick Henry takes him right down, and boom, bang, it's 21-6. And then all of a sudden, Lamar Jackson starts getting desperate. And, you know, the last pick was kind of a desperation out of not his style, but that's what happens. But also another thing, maybe not wasn't made a big issue, but Harbaugh is one of the best coaches. But unlike Bill, he lets his team speak freely during the week. And I think Mr. Earl Thomas, he made a comment like the Patriots didn't want to tackle Derrick Henry.
He did get made to look like a fool.
On one of those runs down the sideline, number 29, all they had to do was push Derrick Henry out of bounds. And Derrick Henry, with a stiff arm, turned number 29 around. He turned him around so bad that you saw the Thomas III right in front of the camera. He turned him around so bad. So that's maybe you should save your talking for the field, Earl Thomas.
And I mean, I think, you know, that's another thing I like about Henry is, I mean, very measured, not cocky at all. Like, it's, I mean, because the one thing you worry about is, like, is this workload, this ridiculous workload he's had over the last 3 weeks going to eventually catch up to him? But, I mean, he looked fresh as a daisy at the end of the game, and he's not talking shit. You know, he's just like, hey, we're just doing our thing. He is like a specimen. And he did that to Thomas on purpose because he pushed him in the back after that and then ran out of bounds. But, yeah, great performance.
But also, we see it
even.
We see every few years.
Sorry, go ahead, John.
Yeah, we see every few years where a team they dominate. You know, they just peak in all facets of the game, and they dominate the lines of scrimmage and everything else, and they carry a quarterback. I mean, you know, Tannehill, 2 games in a row under 100 yards, and they won. You know, everybody's talking about, oh, I can't believe Tannehill's going to make it to the Super Bowl. Tannehill's going to make it to the championship. But this is just one of those occasions that we see every few years where the team carries the quarterback, where even though it's the most important position in sports, that sometimes that if a team executes in every other facet, that they could still make it far, as we've seen like in the past with like Trent Dilfer and other examples.
Absolutely. So
the one thing I was just going to add was it was a pretty sweet cherry on the sundae for Derek throwing the little Tim Tebow.
That was a great play
at the end. Yep. So that was really
great play. That was a great play call. That's the other. I mean, they're very well coached, which we'll talk about. He's pushing all the right buttons. Next up, one of the weirdest games I've seen. Chiefs Texans. The Texans jump out 24-0. The sky's falling. Senior and I watched the game together. And I believe I mentioned to Senior that, you know, they better keep scoring because their defense really sucks. And boy, did that come to fruition, because 24-0 in the second quarter, they're down 28-24 at halftime. The sky falls one way, then it falls the other. Their defense could just do absolutely nothing with Mahomes. Nothing at all. I'll leave the Bill O'Brien coaching stuff to you guys to talk about. But ultimately, the game played out the way it should have, which was the Chiefs scoring all over Houston. The final score is kind of what we expected. It's just kind of you got there in a weird way. But they really never had even a chance in this game, because their defense is just not good enough to stop that offense. And the Chiefs offense played great. John, Talk to me about Billy O. You think? what do you think? What do you think?
I think it was a little overblown. There was no way the lead was built only because Kansas City set a playoff record for most drop passes in the first half. I mean, even the great Travis Kelce and then Robinson, all these butterfingers. When you drop those crucial passes on third down, those are like turnovers, and Houston took advantage. They got a freak block punt. And they got that lead because of a fluke. I think a bigger than obviously the punt was a desperate decision, a terrible decision. That was obvious. But I think it was even worse is that 21-0 on the 13-yard line, 4th and 1. He goes for the field goal. The field goal goes 21-24. It's still 3 scores. You could give him a reel right there, Fred, and go up 4 scores. If you go up 28-0 now. Now you're talking. So I think that was even a worse decision not going for it. Because even if you don't get it, then Kansas City's got to go a long field, and it'll take them a lot more time to score, and maybe you at least got to keep your lead by halftime.
Yeah, and the thing about it, John, is like when you look at the two decisions together, it makes no sense because you're essentially you're a pussy when you're supposed to be when you should be aggressive. Uh-huh. And then you're overly aggressive when you should have some caution. So it just, I mean, he's just not a very good coach. I don't think it cost them the game, but he's just not a very good coach. He's like the Jason Garrett of the AFC.
Whatever the owner, the same thing. The owner likes him. Exactly. There's no GM. He's not going to fire himself. So. As long as they get one playoff game, they make some money, they sell all the games, hey, they're happy. So there's not much pressure, urgency to win there. I think it would take like somebody like a JJ Watt or a Watson to go to the owner, whisper in his ear, say, hey, can we get a competitive coach? But also you got to give key to the Chiefs on both the plays, on both the punt and then the onside kickoff. He forced a fumble, the kid Sorensen on special teams. The big play made two big plays for the Chiefs to get him back in it.
Yep. Yeah. Senior, you have any other takeaways from this game?
Well, just with Billy O's inconsistencies, in the press conference, they first asked him about the punt. They didn't do it in chronological order. And he said, well, the Chiefs have such a high-powered offense that I felt like we had to be aggressive and – at this point, we had the element of surprise on our side because I said, we've got 24, we're up 24-7. We may need 50 to beat this team. And I was right. Okay. So then that just led him right into the counter question. Well, if you were thinking you needed 50 points, why on 4th and a yard from their 20 did you kick a field goal? And he said, I wanted to be aggressive and go for it, but we didn't have a good play for that situation.
4th and 1.
How can you not have a good play to? How can you not have a good play to get a yard?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, the previous week their 4th and 1 play was like the worst play I've ever seen. They ran like their skinny quarterback into two giant.
Well, huge try a different one, try a different one. But how can you not have a play in your playbook to get a yard? You know what I mean?
Right.
It was a really.
Yeah. I mean, zone read, right? I mean, that's what I would always say with a mobile quarterback on a 4th and 1. Just run the zone.
Sean Watson. We don't have a play to get a yard. Unbelievable, Billy O. But also, we watching the game together, Roger, and I was saying it after like maybe the 5th touchdown in a row. It looked to me like. And then that Houston defense wasn't just bad. I think they quit. They quit on them. They looked, I mean, the Chiefs were just every play, no matter what they did at that point, whether they ran a jet sweep or threw a short pass, every play was a big chunk. They were just, they quit. They gave up. That's pretty sad to get that far and you just give up.
I don't think they gave up. They never really stopped them.
The Chiefs just stopped
themselves.
They had nothing from the beginning.
The Chiefs stopped themselves with all those drops at the beginning. That was
of all the matchups and all the games this weekend, like that was the one that really stuck out was the Chiefs offense against the Texans' shitty defense. Yeah. I mean, they had no chance. It's an awful matchup for the Texans. They would have had a better chance against Baltimore.
And there's not much to look forward to. The Texans traded all their draft picks. They got slim pickings coming up in the draft. So
it's true. So Titans at Chiefs. I'll give you my breakdown here. It's a great game. Great game. I think the spread in this game is completely ridiculous. It's also 7.5. I'm done. I am done doubting the Titans. Henry's on one of these runs that, I mean, I just don't think, I don't think that he can be stopped right now. And until someone proves me wrong, I think they have the perfect team to beat a high-powered offense like the Chiefs. In that they're going to keep that offense off the field. The Chiefs aren't going to be able to stop him. And I see a game kind of maybe similar to the Titans Ravens game. I like the Titans. I like them very, very much in this game. Very, very much. And the coaching. I think Vrabel coaches circles around playoff Andy Reid. And this is just going to go down as another Andy Reid would have, could have, should have, maybe next time kind of deal. So that's where I'm at. Titans 24-17. Senior.
Okay, I'm going to go the other way on this one. I'm certainly won't be shocked if you're right, because right now, anything Henry and these guys do can't really shock you. It'll be a historic run, winning those three games in a row on the road. Unbelievable. I just think Tennessee's defense isn't good enough to slow the Chiefs down either. And the Chiefs might, you know, just all they got to do is make a few stops. So I think they jump out front early, and I'm going to say 38-17 Chiefs. A bubble bursts for Tennessee. The magic run ends in Kansas City. John's casting the deciding vote again.
This time I'm going to have to go with Senior, although a little closer. I think it's going to be a close one. But a big key is this is Jones, Chris Jones, on the defensive line. I don't know. But I think he's questionable to play, so he's going to be a big factor, and they're going to have to try to contain Henry somehow. But their best bet is to get up by a couple scores and make it so Tennessee has to rely on Tannehill later, where they can't just lay back and hand it to Henry every play. So they're going to have to rely on Tannehill to at least pass for over 100 yards, but. I think with the past couple of weeks, there's going to be more high-powered offense. I don't think Tennessee's going to be able to match KC's firepower and then score over 30 points.
Yeah, it's basically, I think you're right. I think a big key would be who jumps out front. Because if Kansas City jumps out front, I think it would be pretty much over, because the way Tennessee's been winning, they're not built to come back. They're built to get ahead and pound the ball on the ground. Where if Tennessee does jump out front, I know they play well out front, but Kansas City certainly does have the firepower to come back at them. I mean, obviously they just showed they had firepower to come back from 24-0 like it's the blink of an eye. So probably a big key to the game is who gets the early jump. You know, watch that first quarter very closely. And if Kansas City jumps out front by a couple of touchdowns, it could be lights out early. If Tennessee gets the lead, we could be in for a great game. So
completely agree. Yeah. Tennessee's not built to come back.
Yeah, we haven't seen where Tannehill has to throw the ball. He's had the luxury of Derrick Henry. So I want to see what happens when Tennessee gets down a couple scores.
I mean, if that happens, I think the game's over. Honestly, I don't think they're built to come back like that. They need to be ahead. I just think they're going to be. I mean, I think the blueprint, the blueprint's there with the way they played Baltimore, right? I mean, Baltimore's defense is a lot better than Kansas City's. I mean, across the board, run, pass. So I don't know.
But to your point, Raj, I'd be worried. You're always worried about Andy Reid, and you saw it. Now, maybe that was a little rust, but you saw, his team wasn't exactly ready to play that first quarter.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. If they let Tennessee jump out on them like that, it's over. It's over because, yeah. I mean, they can do these 7-8 minute drives. You just can't stop the guy. I mean, yeah. I get it. I get why they're favored and they should be favored at home. But, something about the Titans. I mean, they really, really have that same kind of feeling like the Giants teams that were just peaking at the right time. And, you know, no one believed it. No one believed it until it was over, you know.
Especially the line play. They're playing the trenches has been very improved. But also Kansas City's defense has been a lot improved. They're not the same team that Tennessee beat. They came back on and beat them 35-32 in Arrowhead. It was a Tannehill pass to Ryan Humphries, who's hurt now. But Kansas City's defense is totally different than that defense that played in the middle of the season. Spagnuolo's got them playing a lot better.
They need Chris Jones, who didn't play in the last game. I mean, he's their best player on defense, and it's just the Henry thing. It's just a tall order because there's not really like what are you going to do to stop him? Do you know what I mean? I mean, the Baltimore sold out to stop the run, and it didn't matter. It just did not matter. And I don't know if, you know, I guess their best hope is that he's worn down a little from all the work.
I think their best hope is just to score more than 30.
Yeah, which they can do. That's the one thing, and you guys might have said, I had to step away for a second. You guys might have said this.
We mentioned about Chris Jones. Yeah, we mentioned about Chris Jones.
And the one thing, the Chiefs is, even if you do control the ball, they can score quick, right? So you give them a minute and a half, they can put up a touchdown in a minute and a half. So very interesting game. I think it's a fantastic game. Would have liked to see Lamar versus Mahomes. Excuse me. But... John, that would have been a game that you hated. That would have been 59-58. This is going to be more your speed, a little slobber knocker,
a little defense, yeah.
So who did you pick, John? Like I said, I had to step away first.
No, I went with Senior, but Senior went Casey big. I went Casey in a tight one.
All right. So I'm alone on the island. So. We shall see.
Good. We
guys.
We got two to one. We got two to.
It's good having you here, Senior, because John and I like tend to agree a lot, and then we both look stupid. And it's
nah. We're about even, Steven. We're not quite on the Colin Cowherd level. We're about a 500.
Right.
Okay. How's this for a little different NFL subject? After last night, is everybody excited to see maybe another great young quarterback enter the NFL next year? Joe Burrow, beyond impressive. Wouldn't you say, guys?
He played great. Cincinnati's a tough situation. But
the poor kid. He is an impressive kid, though. Oh, man. Very, very accurate. Throws a great deep ball. He's pretty mobile. And he might also have that it factor. You
the
know?
College stuff
something
is
special about the kid.
It's in football, especially. It's you just don't know how it's going to translate until you actually see him on an NFL field. You know what I mean? I do think he's going to be good. A little concerning. I mean, he really came out of nowhere, so he doesn't have this like super crazy pedigree like some of these guys have. But yeah, I mean, he had the best season in college football history. Right, you could say that.
Yeah. Oh, although he got
the best in the conference where you play the toughest defenses in the country too. I mean, they beat what, four teams that while they were ranked in the top 10 and seven teams in the top 25 this year. That is extremely impressive. I mean, and those SEC defenses are real defenses. He didn't do it, in the WAC or something. You know, he did it in the SEC. Very, very impressive. He's an impressive kid.
Definitely. But although he got the better of him last night, I think in the long run that whoever tanks this year is going to get Trevor Lawrence. And I think Lawrence is going to be a little more successful when it comes to the pros. So I think some teams are secretly got the tank loaded up for 2020, so they could draft Lawrence in 21.
Vegas, baby.
You say Vegas? You know
they just have to keep Carr. That's it.
You know who's sneaky about that? You know who's sneaky about that? The team, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck. Maybe it's the Colts' time to do a sneak tank again.
Yeah, that's their. That is their thing.
Or maybe that's why Jacksonville kept them marooned. They got the Southern boy at Jacksonville. So.
The Lions, too. You got to think that's a possibility.
Yeah. So, but there's going to be a team, yes. A sneaky tank is going to be the theme for 2020 to get Lawrence.
So, guys, thank you. Can't wait. Going to be a great week. But before we go, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other stuff we have here going on at Place to Be Nation. On the wrestling feed, on a new Wrestling War Zone, JT and Chad dive into WCW Monday Nitro from February 5th of 1996. The Special Relations are back to discuss their GWWE Top 100 lists in episode number 3. On PTBN Extreme Three-Way Dance number 14, JT, Jenny, and my main man John D'Amato continue their ECW adventure with 3 episodes of Hardcore TV from August of 1994, including The Birth of Extreme. Something about that show, John. Straight up your alley. On episode number 31 of Row 1, Seat 1, Ben Zanny and guest Dylan Hales count down their top 10 indie wrestlers of 2019. On Jenny and the Gems, number 4, Jenny, Matt, Scott, and Drew are back with WCW's All-Nighter 1995. You Don't Know Billy Jack, number 11, finds Drew and Jordan watching the legendary 1994 showdown between Misawa and Kawada. Also, be sure to check out the PTBN Pop feed, littered with great content, offering tremendous shows like This Week in the NFL, The Hard Traveling Fanboys, The Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theater, DC for You, Marvel Age, the Brother Sister Rewatch podcast, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well, as it is the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, Journey Through Infinity, and more. On our social media pages, the Tainted Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament is now underway. We are in round 2. There will be 4 matchups per day, so make sure to like our tournament page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter so you don't miss a single one. And I would encourage our voters to vote early and often. Excuse me. Vote early and often. This live read gets me every time.
Sledgehammer's out, but the honeymoon is alive.
So what other iconic great show could we vote out next is the question I have. So maybe Married with Children will lose to fucking Alf. Like I said, I mean I lost a lot of respect. I could see who voted for who, but I lost a lot of respect for some people. I'll just say that. All three people on this show are on the right side of history, right there.
Absolutely. Hammer.
We've officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have all year to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Be sure not to forget to check out placetobenation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Weekly Walk Around the Web. Last but not least, if you're doing your shopping over at Amazon, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the PTBN homepage or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon. And it takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. So a lot of good stuff at Place to Be Nation, so much so that I can never get it out without coughing, which I apologize for. I swear I don't smoke anymore. I'm a healthy cowboy these days. It's just You know, it's a lot right there. I get so excited. I get so excited, especially when we get to that sitcom piece of what's going on at Place to Be Nation. I have such passion that was, you know, really went down in flames when Sledgehammer got voted off unceremoniously by the Wonder Years. And I'm never going to forget that. And I don't think John or Senior are either. So, you know, we really thought with the full weight of this week in the NFL behind the show, we'd at least make it to the second round. But c'est la vie, wasn't meant to be. That's okay. But going to be a great weekend of football. I am going to be in Las Vegas on Sunday. So all weekend, actually. So Saturday night, Conor McGregor versus Cowboy Cerrone. I'm going to be in the house Sunday. My flight doesn't leave till 11 o'clock at night, so I will be watching these games intently from my favorite sports book, probably the Cosmopolitan. I'm going to check out the Raiders Stadium. I'll give you guys a progress report on how that's coming along to home of the terrible Raiders tanking for Trevor. And going to be a great weekend.
We got some gamblers out there, Roger, so give us your scoop on the fight.
Yeah, I would stay away, honestly, from a gambling perspective, because McGregor's he's like a 3-1 favorite, and he's probably going to win. But, I mean, you know, Cowboy's a good fighter. Cowboy's a good fighter, and McGregor hasn't fought a lot lately, so and Cowboy's naturally bigger, so it's not out of the realm of it. Certainly not worth the -300 on McGregor, and, you know, the +200, you could take a flyer on the Cowboy, but I would stay away and just enjoy the fight for what it is, which will be a spectacle. It's good. McGregor, as much of a you know, crazy guy as he is, he's you know, gets a lot of eyes on the sport, and he's certainly a character. I'm going to go to the weigh-in is actually at my hotel, which is pretty cool. So I'm going to go to the weigh-in and, you know, maybe he'll throw something in the crowd that'll hit me. It'll be great. You know, I can't wait, really. But other than that, it's kind of a weak card. Like, they kind of threw him on the top of the card. And
top heavy, yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited to see Macy Barber. She's a young female fighter who's a big up and comer. I saw her live in Boston in her last fight, so she's on the undercard. So she should be good. So stay away, though. I probably won't take my own advice, but you should stay away.
All right, Roger. Just remember what happens in Vegas. You know the rest.
Yes. I'm a pretty laid back guy these days. So what happens in Vegas at the worst will be the Buffalo slot machine bending me over like it always does. You know, I throw money in that thing like, you know, not like certain folks throw money when the dinner bill comes. You know what I mean, John? I feed the Buffalo as opposed to, you know, looking the other way. So, guys, great show. I really like having the three of us on here. I think it's Senior. You've added some spice, like you said, some spice and some great analysis. It's great to have you on. We want you on every week. It's good stuff. So, thank you. Thank you, listeners. Please reach out to any of us anytime, as I say. So, for John, for Senior, I'm the Cowboy, and enjoy this weekend's games.
Good night. Three-man booth.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceofNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceofNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceofNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.